Welcome to Learn from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Dan Novak. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
Drug companies are testing new methods to improve the efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines using combination shots or nasal drops. They hope the continued research will help strengthen resistance to a continuously changing coronavirus. The first COVID-19 vaccines remain protective against serious sickness, hospitalization, and death, especially after a booster dose. However, drug companies are facing growing pressure to develop vaccines better at fighting off milder infections. Updating vaccines to match the latest variants is risky because future variants could be very different. So, companies are considering something like a flu vaccine, which offers protection against 3 or 4 different strains in one shot every year. Moderna and Pfizer are testing 2-in-1 COVID-19 protection that they hope to offer this fall. Each bivalent shot would mix the original proven vaccine with an Omicron-targeted version. Moderna has some early evidence that the idea could work. It tested a combination shot that targeted the original version of the virus and an earlier variant named Beta. It found vaccine recipients developed limited levels of antibodies capable of fighting not just Beta, but also newer variants like Omicron. Moderna now is testing its Omicron-targeted bivalent candidate. Dr. David Kimberlin, a CDC advisor from the University of Alabama at Birmingham, recently suggested that for the average person, 2 doses of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine plus 1 booster, a total of 3 shots, gets you set up and ready for what may become a yearly booster. After that first booster, CDC data suggests an additional dose offers most people a small, temporary benefit. Experts recommend 3 shots because vaccination triggers development of antibodies that can fight off coronavirus infection. Such antibody levels naturally decrease over time. But memory cells jump into action to make new virus fighters if an infection sneaks in. Rockefeller University researchers found those memory cells may become stronger and able to target more diverse kinds of the virus after the 3rd shot. Even if someone who is vaccinated gets a milder infection, memory cells still help give time to protect you against severe illness, said Dr. Paul Offit of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. But some people, those with severely weakened immune systems, need more doses early on for a better chance of protection. Americans 50 and older are being offered a 2nd booster, following similar decisions by Israel and other countries that offer the extra shot to give older people a little more protection. The CDC is developing advice to help those eligible decide whether to get an extra shot now or wait. Among those who might want a 2nd booster sooner are the elderly, people with health problems, or people who are at high risk of exposure from work or travel. It is hard for a shot in the arm to form lots of virus-fighting antibodies inside the nose where the coronavirus latches on. But a nasal vaccine might offer a new way to prevent infections. When I think about what would make me get a second booster, I actually would want to prevent infection, said Dr. Grace Lee of Stanford University, who chairs CDC's Immunization Advisory Committee. I think we need to do better. Nasal vaccines are difficult to develop, and it is not clear how quickly any could become available. But several are in clinical trials around the world. One in late-stage testing, made by India's Bharat Biotech, uses a chimpanzee cold virus to deliver a harmless copy of the coronavirus spike protein to the lining of the nose. I certainly do not want to abandon the success we have had with COVID-19 shots, said Dr. Michael Diamond of Washington University in St. Louis. Diamond helped create the candidate that is now licensed to Bharat. But we're going to have a difficult time stopping transmission with the current vaccines, Diamond added. We have all learned that. I'm John Russell.
Since the beginning of 2021, at least 17 states have passed measures aimed at how public schools can teach highly debated subjects, says the publication Education Week. These efforts, however, have caused concern among some teachers of advanced placement or AP classes. These are college-level classes taught to high school students. AP classes in U.S. history, for example, require discussion of subjects like slavery and European colonization. Legislative measures aimed at limiting disputed ideas in schools have been mainly led by Republican Party lawmakers. Some of the measures are aimed at preventing the teaching of critical race theory, or CRT. CRT is a way of understanding American society that places great importance on how race shaped its politics and culture. It is taught in universities. Some officials say there is little evidence that CRT is being taught a lot in American public schools. Education Week says several other states have similar bills currently under consideration. It has been following efforts to pass these kinds of education measures around the country. The measures are different depending on where they are being introduced. In Ohio, for example, a bill that was introduced last May would ban school districts from teaching, advocating, or promoting divisive concepts. Divisive concepts are ideas that cause a lot of disagreement between people. A New Hampshire bill would ban teaching a negative account or representation of the founding and history of the United States of America. But some teachers doubt it is possible to teach some subjects without raising questions that cause people to disagree. Tassie Zahner is an AP American history teacher in Montgomery County, Maryland. She told VOA last year that it would be very hard to teach her class without teaching America's history of racism. In order to teach an AP U.S. history class correctly, you have to talk about those things, she said. You can't prepare students if you're not teaching the truth about U.S. history. AP is a nationwide program that provides high school students with college-level classes. Through the AP program, students can, in many cases, earn credit towards a college degree. Classes offered include history, English, math, and art. The College Board is the nonprofit organization based in New York City that creates the curriculum for high school AP classes. AP classes are unlike other classes in American high schools. The curriculum of most classes is set by local school districts. The College Board told Education Week in January that it does not know of any examples in which state requirements conflict with the standards of college-level AP courses. But in March, the group sent teachers a reminder of AP's most important ideas and values, called principles. The principles suggest the organization could bar schools from offering AP classes in districts where teachers are limited in what they can teach. Students are expected to analyze different perspectives from their own, the principles state. The AP Statement of Principles also says, if a school bans required topics from their AP courses, the AP program removes the AP designation from that course and its inclusion in the AP course ledger provided to colleges and universities. Most of the legislative measures are aimed at kindergarten through 12th grade schools. But the New York-based nonprofit organization PEN America says it found 40 bills that target what can be taught at colleges and universities. Some political officials have said they oppose the teaching of disputed ideas in colleges. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said on Twitter in February, I will not stand by and let loony Marxist University of Texas professors poison the minds of young students with critical race theory. He added, We banned it in publicly funded K-12, and we will ban it in publicly funded higher ed. Some college professors oppose many of the bills. In a statement last year, the American Association of University Professors said that when politicians mandate the academic content that faculty can and cannot teach, they prevent colleges and universities from fulfilling their missions. Frank Scott is an AP U.S. history teacher in Texas. He said discussing topics like racism and violence in the U.S. do not make students dislike the country. He told Education Week that when you're honest with the things that are not very pleasant, you have students that come around to loving this country even more because of what it's been through. I'm Dan Novak.
Thank you. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look back at some of the social issues and cultural changes in America in the 1970s and 80s. In some ways, the 1980s seemed like the opposite of the 1960s. The 60s were years of protest for social justice and change. Many Americans demonstrated against the Vietnam War. Blacks demonstrated for civil rights. Women demonstrated for equality. Many people welcomed new social programs created by the government. By the 1980s, however, many people seemed more concerned with themselves than with helping society. To them, success was measured mainly by how much money a person made. People wanted to live the good life, and that took money. The changes started to become evident during the 1970s. For a while, these years brought a continuation of the social experiments and struggles of the 60s. But then, people began to see signs of what society would be like in the 80s. There were a number of reasons for this change. One reason was the end to America's military involvement in Vietnam after years of war. Another was the progress of civil rights activists and the women's movement toward many of their goals. A third reason was the economy. During the 1970s, the United States suffered a recession. Interest rates and inflation were high. A shortage of imported oil as a result of tensions in the Middle East only added to the problems. As the 1970s went on, many Americans became tired of economic struggle. They also became tired of social struggle. They had been working together for common interests. Now, many wanted to spend more time on their own interests. This change appeared in many parts of society. It affected popular culture, education, and politics.
Let me hear your idea again.
Okay, I want us to watch Jack Lemmon and a group of famous scientists discuss pollution and ecology on Channel 13.
Good. And I want to watch football highlights on Channel 2. Now, guess what's going to happen?
One of the most popular television programs of that time was a comedy series that often dealt with politics and serious social issues. The show was called All in the Family. The family was led by a factory worker named Archie Bunker. Carol O'Connor played Archie, and Jean Stapleton played his wife, Edith. The Bunkers lived in a working-class neighborhood in the Queens borough of New York City. Archie represented the struggles of the blue-collar working man against the social changes in America. He loved his country and was socially conservative in the extreme.
What about John Wayne? Now, before you say anything, let me warn you. When you're talking about the Duke, you ain't just talking about an actor. You're talking about the spirit that made America great.
Are you kidding?
His opinions on subjects like race and women's equality were always good for an argument with his liberal daughter and even more liberal son-in-law.
Good, I can mail my letter today and it'll get to Washington by Monday.
Washington? Are you writing to Washington?
That's right, Michael wrote the president.
You write to the president about what?
All the things we've been talking about. The pollution of our air, the pollution of our water, the way us housewives have no protection from foods without nutrition, how they make products with harmful things in them. Like, you saw what happened to Michael from that shirt.
You, Michael Stivnik, meathead, you have the nerve to write to the President of the United States about your rash?
Edith would always try to make peace.
Maybe he knows a good skin man.
Monday, Monday.
another popular program, Happy Days, about family life in the 1950s, offered an escape from the social issues of the day.
Goodbye, gray sky, hello blue. There's nothing can hold me when I hold you. Seems so right, it can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling all week long.
Music also changed. In the 1960s, folk music was popular. Many of those folk songs were about social issues. But in the 1970s, there was hard rock and punk.
Here's Wonder Mike, Hank, and Master G, the Sugar Hill Gang.
And in 1979, a group called the Sugar Hill Gang brought rap music to national attention with a hit called Rapper's Delight.
And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie, let's rock.
In bookstores, the growing number of self-help books offered another sign of social change. These books advised people about ways to make themselves happier. One of the most popular self-help books was I'm Okay, You're Okay by Dr. Thomas A. Harris. It was published in 1969 and led the way for many other popular psychology books throughout the 70s. Politically, the United States went through several changes during the 1970s. For most of the 60s, the nation was governed by liberal Democratic administrations. Then, in 1968, a conservative Republican, Richard Nixon, was elected president. Nixon won a second term 4 years later, but had to resign in 1974 because of the Watergate scandal. Nixon's vice president, Gerald Ford, took his place. 2 years later, Ford was defeated by Jimmy Carter, a Democrat who, until then, was little known nationally. The election showed that Americans were angry with the Republican Party because of Watergate, but they soon became unhappy with President Carter. They blamed him for failing to improve the economy and for failing to end a crisis involving American hostages in Iran. He lost his re-election campaign to Ronald Reagan.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Reagan, a Republican, won two terms and led the nation during most of the 1980s. For many people, the Reagan years offered a renewed sense of economic opportunity. Reagan reduced taxes, which increased his popularity. But the national debt grew as he raised military spending to put pressure on the Soviet Union. The self-centeredness of many people in the 70s and 80s gave rise to terms like the me generation. And there was the rise of yuppies, young urban professionals remaking older neighborhoods in cities, often displacing poorer people. Popular entertainment at that time was often about financial success.
Premiering Sunday, April 2nd, Dallas, where money buys power and passion breeds conflict.
Dallas was a TV drama about a Texas oil family with more money and more problems than they knew what to do with. It became a hit not just in the United States, but around the world. Actor Larry Hagman played J.R.
Your daddy lacked the killer instinct. He forgave those who transgressed against him. People just weren't afraid of him. And he overlooked old J.R.'s golden rules.
And what might they be?
Don't forgive and don't forget. And do unto others before they do unto you. And most especially, keep your eye on your friends, because your enemies will take care of themselves. Oh, and one other thing. The oil business is a little bit like a poker game. It's good to get caught bluffing early on, because after that, somebody's going to call you when you got a winning hand.
Dynasty was another popular series about rich people behaving badly. One of its stars was veteran actor John Forsythe.
Those banks are going to find out that they've got more than they can handle. Denver Carrington is Blake Carrington. And they'll come begging to me to run that company again. I know they will. And I'll make them get down on their knees when they come begging.
There was also Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, a series about real-life wealthy people, hosted by Robin Leach.
Our bustling capital city combines the chic with the freak, the old guard with the avant-garde. So let's go upper deck with a couple of my good friends and run away with the rich and famous.
And at the movie theater, there was the 1987 film Wall Street.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Michael Douglas played a character named Gordon Gekko, who earns his wealth by raiding companies and illegally trading on inside information.
Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind, and greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Thank you very much.
Good triumphed over evil in the Rambo action films starring Sylvester Stallone. He played a troubled hero who had fought in Vietnam. The films were violent, but they represented a more positive view than society had shown in the past toward veterans of that unpopular war. In the 1980s, people came to fear a new disease that could be spread by sex or blood. It was the rise of the AIDS epidemic. At the same time, a new drug, crack cocaine, started a wave of violence in American cities. Technology was also on the rise.
You don't have to be a genius to use a computer. Let Computerland show you how easy it is to manage your own small business or home finances with the Atari 800. Record keeping, information, communication, and a world of new ideas from Atari.
Personal computers appeared in more and more offices, schools, and homes. The 1980s brought stardom to young entertainer Michael Jackson. And no history of the 80s would be complete without noting the rise of music television, better known as MTV.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and you're too free. We got to install microwave ovens, custom kitchen delivery.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.